Hello, welcome to Bagel Tech Mac, the Mac show from the Bagel Tech Network. And nothing's happened this week in Apple News. Not a damn thing. It's all been really, really quiet and nothing interesting. So thanks for joining us. See you next week. No, there was an iPad, allegedly. And we're all excited about that. I haven't slept since Wednesday, it has to be said. The other excited people joining me are top left, a welcome return after being our man in South America, Dr. Don McAllister. How you doing, mate?
Not too bad. I'm not quite a doctor yet, though, so, you know.
Well, we're all doctors today, apparently.
Okay.
We bought it at the University of Buenos Aires, which you visited, right. No doubt, so...
Yeah, if you heard the pre-show, you know where to get your doctorate now from, so that's good. So,
exactly.
Yeah. No, nice to be back. Nice to be back. It's been a long time. It must be 4 or 5 weeks since I was on. So nice to be
back.
It
is. It is. You were on, I think, in January.
That's right. It was just a week before. Yeah. I did a slight sort of working holiday. I went over to Macworld and then on to the Macmania cruise around South America. So it was good.
Right. Excellent. Patchy internet, but notwithstanding, you still managed to get us communications. Well done, mate.
I did. I did my best.
Below him, we've got Mr. Kyle Swagger. Dude, how's it going? Nice dinner.
I'm good, dude. How are you, dude?
I'm all right, dude. Right. You're feeling better this week, I hope.
I'm feeling a lot better, yeah. Last week, well, let's just say I didn't see much of the rest of the house except the bathroom.
You had the Philippine two steps. Jolly good. And, yeah. Next to him, who joined us on Wednesday night for the Mac launch for that 2 hour of audio mammothing, which was somewhat irreverent at times, Dr. Andrew Stevenson's Dr. Happy Mac. Hello, mate. How are you doing?
Hello there. I am an honorary doctor.
You are an honorary doctor. What did you do that was profound?
Oh, you beat me with the number of people that I get that have come up to me in the street as I'm getting out of the van and going, "Are you a doctor?"
God help you in a road traffic accident.
Yes.
Finally, but by no means least, a very brave standing for Will Green, who unfortunately got broken into last night and they've nicked everything. So I hope the tossers that did it, I hope their insides become their outsides. But very kindly, we've got Alex joining us, Alex G. Fox from the Photo Show. How you doing, mate? And prolific Mac user as well, not just a photographer.
Yeah, I had to stop using my Mac to come on the Mac show, so I'm up and ready.
Good man, good man. The week in Apple, it's been a great week. The thing that we can't not start with, of course, is the iPad 2. Were we all excited?
Yes.
It doesn't sound very excited, does it? What are we thinking?
I'm still trying to get some sleep back from being up at 2 a.m., but yeah, I liked it.
Before we get into the kind of
better than I expected.
Okay, well, before we get into the technical stuff of it, you know, that we did the thumbs up, thumb down, and generally speaking, there was a bit of a wobble. Not everyone was convinced that it was a great upgrade, but I mean, have they done enough, Don?
Yeah, well, I think expectations weren't too high this time round. I think pretty much all the pundits and the rumour mongers got pretty much everything spot on. You know, we expected it to be faster, we expected it to be lighter. We expected the cameras, you know, so they were all ticks in the boxes, really. So I sort of went into it not prepared to be overwhelmed with it, but just really happy that they actually did tick all those boxes. And they've really addressed most of the things that people were, you know, other people said, oh, I'm not getting the first generation, I'm going to wait till the second generation and wait for the cameras, etc. Well, they did all that. And then they also managed to sort of significantly shave it down as well. I still can't believe until I see it with my own eyes that it's actually thinner than an iPhone 4. I mean, that's just I can't quite get my head around that. It seems a bit weird, but no, I thought it was a great presentation, and I think they've you know, they've sort of positioned it correctly for the coming year with all the competitors coming along.
Yeah, I think the thing with the thickness is that I noticed as soon as they said that, I was like, oh my god, and I pulled my iPad out and my iPhone 4 and put the two together, and if you line the glass up with the glass, the thing that kind of makes the iPad 1 thicker is that belly curve on the back of it, because it is pretty steep, actually. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if they shaved down the battery and improved the battery technology, then you could see where they've probably taken some of that away, but it's still a big old jump. 33% thinner, and actually thinner than an iPhone 4 in total, is pretty impressive. Is that going to change anything for anyone? Is that going to be like a, you know, it was too big and bulky before, but now it's fine? Or is it just a wow?
Well, I don't know. It's, I mean, everyone seems to be comparing it in weight to the Kindle, which is a featherweight. So it's still going to be substantially more than the Kindle. Mm. So it's probably not going to shut the people that say that the Kindle's it's too heavy compared to the Kindle. They're still going to be moaning about that. I'm not sure it's going to make a huge pile of difference there.
No. I mean,
the thing is with the weight, though, is I didn't want them to make it too lightweight, because as it stands at the minute, it's got a bit of weight to it. You know, it feels substantial. And if they were to make it featherweight, I think it would lose some of that. But I think they've taken the right step. They've made it a bit lighter, so it should be easier to sort of read a book, you know, holding it high. And also, more importantly, FaceTime, you know, if you want to hold it up. They don't want it to be too heavy for FaceTime. Sure. But yeah. I didn't want them to go too far and make it too lightweight.
No, I mean, they're always going to be onto a loser there, because, you know, if you just look at the machine, I mean, the Kindle's made of plastic and the e-ink screen is, you know, it's flat on there. And the Mac, the iPad's got the glass front. Probably the glass front on the pad probably weighs as much as the Kindle does by itself. So chasing that sort of thing's going to be a losing strategy anyway.
Dave in the chat room is suggesting, Don, that he was in the queue for a Motorola Zoom until you stamped on it. And now he's waiting for an iPad 2. So you've obviously gushed over this on Twitter and converted a few people.
Oh yeah, no, we've had a few exchanges with Dave Thackeray. Yeah, we've had a few exchanges on Twitter about Zoom and the iPad. But again, you know, it's people. Dave won't mind me saying this, but it's people comparing specs between the tablets, and it's not all to do with the specs. It's really to do with the software and the usability and the user experience. And although, you know, the Zoom still looks good on paper, when you compare it, the usability side of it, you know, I haven't actually used a Zoom, to be honest, so I can't really comment on that. But from what I've read, you know, the usability is a big factor.
What other tablets has anyone else used on the panel? I mean, I can hold my hand up to having had a go with the Galaxy Tab, and I thought it was a dog. I mean, it just nothing was smooth. You know, you hit a button, and it was like, come on. iPad's already running at this point. You know, there was enormous change between the two, and as a user experience, I had a couple of hours to play with it, and I was just appalled by what I saw. And then when I saw the price tag at $699, was thinking, looking for someone with wearing a mask and carrying a set of guns, trying to rob me blind. Is there any of the other tablets that you've had a play with?
And only on shelves and shops. I think that's part of the iPad. It's a strange thing to say, but I think that's part of the iPad's problem, is even the original incarnation was so much more advanced than all the other items that even when they brought out a new one and advanced it that little bit more, people's expectations are, well, if Apple's bringing out something new, it's got to be earth-shattering. So there's like a slight feeling of disappointment because of, you know, on the front of it, it just looks like it's slightly lighter. It's got a couple of cameras and it's got a dual-core processor. I'm sure there's a lot more to it than that. But I think that's Apple's problem, because the iPad was so much better than everything else to start off with. How much further can they go in one leap?
I mean, have Apple really leapt ahead with this? You know, are they now way out in front again, or have they done just enough to stay ahead? Or, I mean, it's a killer blow to some of the. I mean, you look at Sam's Club today showing the Zoom tablet at $539, and they're renowned for having a fairly decent price, but they're still $40 away. You know, it's. Is it just enough, or is it a big slam?
No, I think this one was just enough. I think it was, you know, just to address the criticisms that things it was lacking and just to give it that performance boost, the extra memory, the internal memory. We're assuming they've bumped up the internal RAM to 512 meg for the high definition video and the more sophisticated applications. But yeah, it wasn't, although they have done a complete redesign, I don't think it was a complete sort of, you know, generation change. It's very much a speed bump and some extra features, but more than enough probably to see off any competition in the near future, and then plan for the next iPad, you know, in 12 months' time or whatever, and then perhaps then do another leapfrogging of that.
One thing I was really surprised by, though, there was just zero mention of gaming, absolutely nothing. Why would you put such a big graphics leap into it and then not mention gaming at all?
Well, perhaps the old one was good enough for what's already been written. If nothing's been written that can actually take advantage of the new technology, there's not an awful lot of point in trying to flog that new technology on that ground.
Well, Fireman announced yesterday, of course, though, that, that Real Racing, which was a very good graphic anyway to start with on iPad 1, has been boosted to HD to Real Racing 2 HD to take advantage of the graphics capability that's now within the system.
Yeah, but that would be if you brought that up on the you know, when they announced it and you had one publisher coming up with one game, it was going to make the whole thing look a little bit possibly overkill.
There was nothing to show, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, when they originally launched the original, I think it was, I don't know if it was the iPad or the iPhone 4, there was just streams. It went on for hours. It was every developer that had ever walked into San Francisco coming up on stage and showing you something quite incredible. Unless you've got that level of, you know, level of stuff to show people, you're probably better off just letting people discover it for themselves.
I think there was one app that did get popped out at the end, which looks like it really is, you know, going to take advantage of the fact that the graphics have been speeded up 9 times and that they've, you know, it's got the dual core processor, is GarageBand.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that is going to pull in graphics processing and CPU horsepower like nobody's business. And to have that on the app, I think GarageBand by itself and then iMovie, those two apps popping up on the iPad, it's, I think those are a lot of the leap forward.
I thought I seen that that is actually going to be available also for the iPad 1, though.
Really?
I thought I remember reading that somewhere that we're with that update, I think it was for 4.3, that we're actually going to be able to have GarageBand and iMovie on our current iPads right now.
Andy, could you just turn your speakers down a shade, please, mate? We're getting feedback there. I can't find that out. We'll have a look while we're going through the stuff. But that sounds
interesting. I did read that somewhere as well. Whether or not it's a reduced feature set or something, though, I'm not sure. But I did read somewhere that it was going to be available on the original iPad as well. Going back to the games, the thing I was really pleased there were no games shown, because every time they show games on one of these keynotes, everyone sort of drifts off and, you know, it's really boring.
Yeah, true.
You can only see so many games without going, oh, okay, enough, let's go move on to the next thing. But it was interesting how they focused on, Gruber did a fantastic blog post today about the event, and he was mentioning that when the iPad launched, they didn't really know what they had. They knew they had the seed of a successful product, but they didn't really know how successful it was going to be. So they focused more on the, you know, iWork. So they did the spreadsheet and they did numbers, etc., to show that it was still like a computer and sort of halfway house between your phone and a netbook. Whereas now they understand that the product, they've seen how many different ways it's being used and how people are using it in lots of different creative ways. So the focus on this one was creativity. You know, it was iMovie, it was GarageBand, it was actually using the thing to create content, not use as a normal PC. So, and I think that Gruber really hit it on the head today with that blog post.
No, I read that after you tweeted it, and it did look very, very good. He was on. Yeah. I mean, according to the GarageBand thing here, I mean, the one thing that really struck me as very intuitive was the ability to play the instruments as well now with the iPad. So, you know, I mean, the guitar, I was rocked by the guitar system when it was shown. Of having preset chords down across the strings and then just strumming down each string as you need it. So, you know, generally in a song, you'll probably have 8 or 9 chords perhaps in a guitar, you know, for a rhythm section. So you could pre-program and play them in as live or play them in with the music as it's recording on the device. That seemed, you know, that seemed really quite special, because now you've got an input device linked to a computing device at the same time, and that's got to be great for you know, doing stuff on the move. You get a moment of inspiration when you sat on the bus or something with a set of headphones. There's nothing stopping you.
I love the thing about it. I mean, to me, that's
Go ahead, Carl.
I was going to say that's one thing I find cool, really, really cool about it. You know, because I play music. I'm a musician. So as I said before, as a demo tool, you almost have a studio in a box now, essentially, that you can sit there and practically do anything with, and it'll sound better than demo tapes it used to do on a little Fostech cassette recorder so many years ago. I just wish it had more than 8 tracks, though. That's one thing I thought was a bit of a limitation to it. But maybe that's how Apple's seeing it, is just for demo purposes only. Then you can export that over into Logic, into Pro Tools, or GarageBand on the Mac.
Is this going to take you back to your old Fostek 4-track where you had to bounce three tracks down onto one, and then you had to keep that one track spare all the time?
Sergeant Pepper, man. Sergeant Pepper.
Bouncing it down.
Definitely the GarageBand will work on the first and second gen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, iMovie not. iMovie's the second gen only.
Yes. I mean, that's got to be the graphics, surely, then. So, I mean, there's good comment from Mark in the chat room saying the iPad is now out of the consumption-only device stereotype. Agreed? This really is a creative tool.
Yeah, very much.
Yeah, I mean, it's the first, I mean, usable guitar synthesizer.
Yeah. Because
there really hasn't been one. And like you say, I mean, you can sit and work out. I mean, you're not going to be able to play chords on the thing, not properly, unless you've got very strange shaped hands. But you'll be able to work out some music as you're sitting on the bus. You'll be able to, you know, augment a chord or something just to see how it sounds. But you'll be able to do the strumming, the timing and everything, which is the actual difficult part of the playing the guitar. Putting the fingers in the right place has never been the hardest part, but the actual timing and the nuances you'll actually now be able to create. So it's taking it into the same synthesizer as they do with the pianos now.
I mean, that was exactly it, because I mean, just following on quickly from what you're saying there, Alex, that's exactly what I felt with the Galaxy Tab, is that the input never matched the visual feedback to the output. So when I was touching and moving stuff, it wasn't doing it with my finger, whereas with the iPad, it's like whatever it is that you're touching is fixed to the end of your finger. I mean, the one thing that I did when it first came out was shuffleboard, and the shuffleboard on that is just, it's like you're attached to it.
Yeah, but I think when you did the Mac, the presentation the other day, you said it was tied into the accelerometer in some way.
Yeah, you get velocity keystrokes. So if you're holding the pad up and you hit it, the velocity is measured, and it will also then translate into a keystroke firmness.
Sure. So you've actually got the dexterity, I mean, of being able to play everything other than the finger positions on the chords. It's an absolute whole new level of input now. I mean, it's a good example, it being a guitar-based thing, but can you imagine all the other things you are now going to be able to use the iPad for, because you're going to have that dexterity of feel as well as the software?
Mm.
The one really interesting thing, though, is it's very aspirational as well. What they've done is that if you're a musician, great, you can use it, but if you're not a musician, they've made it simple to play, you know, as you mentioned before, sort of predefined chords, etc. I don't know if you've tried the, is it the Smule Magic Piano application? It's a very simple application, but you can put it in one particular mode where wherever you tap the screen, it'll actually play a melody, and you can actually put expression into the melody, and you don't need to know anything about music. You can just, as long as you know the timing of the music, you know, and it sounds great, and it's really nice to do. Well, they've sort of taken that to the next level now and given you the control of predefined chords and all sorts of stuff within GarageBand. So I think people, even if they haven't got a musical bone in the body, will still be able to play with it and get enjoyment from it, which I think is pretty neat.
Definitely.
Yeah. It's like the absorption you get from watching, you know, listening to Dark Side of the Moon and having your iTunes visualization on. But now you've actually got some way of interacting with that same feeling. Mm-hmm. I think it could go a long way.
Well, you've already got, you know, several musicians playing them live on stage and using it as an input device to begin with straight away. Mm. Very, very good. Anything on the specs that really astounded anyone or jumped out as something that's a real boost or leap forwards?
Processor? Not a leap forwards. I the processor. I mean, it's not a leap forwards, and I think that goes back to our original thing we were talking about. I think, as much as I hate saying this, this is almost as not really playing catch up, but it's almost as saying we're still relevant in the market. And I think they had to do this, and which is probably why we're still hearing rumors about an iPad 3. We almost got everything we wanted, except maybe for that Retina display. But yeah, probably the processor. And I have to say, I love how it looks. I think they did really well on the design this time. I was happy that they kept the nice middle back and we didn't have an iteration like we did with the iPhone 3G or 3GS where we went plastic all of a sudden, these kind of things. It still has, I would say, an even more elegant look to it than the previous one.
Definitely. What about the white one? Are we all going to buy the white one? We know Will.
I love the white one. I love it.
I'm the only think one. The screen I guess, stands out though.
It's growing on me. I have to say, it's growing on me. But I didn't like it at first. But what about the cover though? The smart cover. I think that opened quite a few people's eyes, and it was also a major talking point as well. You know, simple things such as a cover, but you know, typical Apple, they've taken a simple cover and they've, you know, sexed it up basically. They've got magnets in there. They've got folding things and things that clamp onto the side of your iPad. Looks to be a really nice design. I want to see it in action first before I give it two thumbs up, but they generated a lot of buzz just around the cover itself.
Did you all see the story today that they reckon that Apple have stolen it from a Japanese bath cover? Apparently you get rolling up Japanese bath covers that are exactly the same, and they showed a picture of one and it was the same colour.
It's the same colour,
and the
right.
same number of segments.
You know, I've got to slightly disagree here, because for a design thing, it's the first thing Apple's done that actually isn't completely symmetrical. Because from looking at the pictures, the way that cover clips on, you've got sort of magnetic hinges to one side of the iPad. And I just think it looks awkward. I mean, I'm sure it's just me being, you know, design-led here, but I just think that whole thing, to me, unbalances it as a visual object.
I'm in agreement. And to be honest with you, it's the thing I hate the most that they came out with. I think it's too expensive. It's a front cover for the tablet. And I don't know. It was one thing that did not turn me on. And plus, it doesn't have an Apple logo on it anywhere.
Is this... I mean, the point there, though, is with the cover. I looked at it and thought, oh, wow, fantastic. I'll have to get one of those for mine. And then I looked at it this morning on a few of the pictures, and I was like, that's not going to fit. Because it's sculpted to the curve of the new iPad, and my old one has got that.
Oh, yeah, no, it won't work on the old one. It'll have to just be on the new one.
Oh, how
they've
convenient.
Got magnets built into the bezel within
exactly.
the new. They've actually designed the iPad to accommodate the cover, so there is magnets built into the actual device itself for it to clamp onto.
Hang on a second, guys.
Carry on, Don.
Sorry. It's just going back to the point of it not having an Apple logo on. I think the design philosophy is they want to show the Apple logo off on the back of the machine, because I think it's really irritated Apple that they've designed this beautiful machine, and you know, very few people actually use it without a cover or without a case. And all the cases completely obliterate all the nice design that they've done. You know, they completely enclose the whole thing. You just see the glass panel, and it could be anything. And if you look at the video, especially the video on the presentation on the keynote, you'll see that probably 98% of the people using iPads on that video don't have a cover on the iPad at all. And that completely goes against what I've sort of experienced. Virtually everybody uses a cover. So this is sort of like their attempt to say, yes, we understand we do need to have a cover, but let's not hide the sleek design of the iPad. Let's do it minimally so that we can actually still expose the back. And don't forget, you can just rip it off. It'll just detach very easily, put it to one side.
That can be a bad thing, though.
Pardon?
That can be a bad thing, though.
The screen clean as well, isn't it? On the inside, it's got
a little rubby thing.
A cloth layer that automatically cleans the fingerprints off the screen.
Which the old Apple case had as well, as it had a clothy finish, didn't it, on the inside? No? Am I making that up? Rose-tinted spectacles?
Yeah. No, it's a microfiber.
I like this one. I like going naked. Just pure naked, man.
But getting back to the iPad.
Yeah, I was going to say, if they want to make the Apple, you know, they want people to not put covers on it and people enjoy the design feature of it, then make it out of some material that, one, doesn't slide like the slippiest piece of ice you've ever had in your hand, and two, something that you're not absolutely petrified that every time you put it down it's going to get a crack or smashed to pieces. You know, if you want people to not adulterate your piece of hardware, then make your piece of hardware tough enough to not need to be adulterated.
That's a fair point, because the original iPad was very, very slippery in the fingers. The only thing that you had to really kind of contact onto was the Perspex bit of the Apple logo at the back of it. The rest of it, if you suffer from dry hands and you're not a sweaty boy, then it used to slide all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, you take the iPad... Not the iPad, the iPhone 4. I mean, you could play air hockey with it without needing an air hockey table. It's so slidey.
Mm.
You know, you're taking your life into your own hands if you haven't got a cover on that.
Yeah, but it's also tough, though, isn't it? I mean, I've used the bumper for ages, and I got one of these new, this thing here, which is a Mophie case for it. So it meant I didn't have to have the bumper. So I took the bumper off, and then I only really put this on when I need to go out. So I have the phone sort of just in my pocket, and I'm amazed just how resilient that iPhone 4 is. It doesn't get scratched. I mean, if you're going to drop it from a height, it's going to shatter. But, you know, just to place it on, it really sort of used to worry me placing it on a table, you know, with the glass front on a table. But, I mean, I've had it since they came out, and there's not a mark on it. It's very, very resilient, very tough the way they've finished it.
Well, I've lost mine twice now when it didn't have a cover by putting it on the back of the couch. And anything that isn't 100% flat, it eventually slides off and goes down the back of the couch.
Well, you know, that my iPhone 5 is going to have magnets in. You put magnets in your couch then.
Yeah, that'll be it. And it'll have a special cover that will Velcro on it.
The iCouch made out of leather. Looks like Steve's on the stage. Mark's wondering if there's
duct tape and all.
Duct tape as well, yeah. Mark's wondering if there's any issue with computing devices and having magnets, sending a shiver down his spine, he says. And the other question from Dave was what about the absence of the Retina display? I mean, is that bothered anyone? Surprising? Not
bothered me. Bothered me. I was hoping for it. This is one thing that everybody was really, really hoping for. Personally, I think I would have taken the Retina display over the dual-core processor, to be honest. Because I've just gotten so used to that on the iPhone 4. It's just beautiful. There's no other phone that looks like that. It doesn't look that good.
No, but the point is, as a photographer, if you had a Retina, it's a 1024768, I think, the iPad.
At the moment, yeah.
Now, if you had a Retina display on it, now, isn't that something like 4 or 5 times the resolution? There is nothing you could do other than have a 20 megapixel TIFF image on the front of that screen that is actually going to utilize that amount of pixels in that amount of space. You know, I mean, HD, full HD is going to take 1/4 of the screen up. So it's all going to be interpolation to make it fit the whole screen anyway. So at the moment, the technology we have would not make the most of having a Retina display at that size.
I mean, if you look at Apple's technology in general, though, it stops at 720p. Anything that you're going to interface with is all 720p. The camera's capturing 720. The editor's going to output to a maximum of 720. And the Apple TV only deals with 720 as well anyway. So,
although the pad itself will shove 1080 out now, won't it?
It'll output 1080. Now, I mean, that was the other interesting thing. The HDMI connector will output at 1080 if needs be. But I just looked at the connector and thought to myself, is there any reason that it won't work on the iPhone? Could that be an iPhone device to go out to HDMI as well as? Because it's only the 30-pin connector. Unless there's something in the hardware that's stopping it, if it's just a case of you've got to upgrade to iOS 4.3, that's going to be coming to the iPhone as well as. That could be a real boost to the iPhone as a portable educational device, presenting device, gaming device.
Would the iPhone have enough processing power to push out HDMI? I mean, you could on a still image, obviously, but could, for instance, video or anything, would all the power in that iPhone be enough to do it? It might just not be powerful enough to run it. It might be a good idea, but it just won't work.
Mind you, the iPhone 4 has the A4 processor, which is the same processor as the iPad. And the iPad will actually push out it will only push out video for applications that have been designed to push out video. So you can't do the mirroring. The mirroring's coming in iPad 2, which I think is a great move. But as far as the device will actually work on the iPad 1 as well, but it will only output from applications that have been designed to output video through the port. So the iPhone, it possibly could. In fact, I think it is compatible with the iPhone. I think I've seen somewhere that it is compatible with the iPhone.
I mean, that'd just be a huge... I mean, you could have announced that on Wednesday and I'd have been happy.
So the iPhone might be 720 only, though.
Well,
I'm looking here at the Apple Store right now, and according to what I'm seeing about the Apple Digital AV adapter, it is compatible with the iPhone 4, iPod Touch, 4th generation, the original iPad, and iPad 2.
Great.
There you go.
So that could, I mean, that, the possibilities then are endless. I mean, the one thing that I was thinking about when we were going through the launch was, what about if you have got that output and then you're handheld device, whether it's iPad 1 or 2 or iPhone, then stops being the display device and becomes the controlling surface. So you link it to a TV or you link it to a monitor, and then everything that would happen on the screen is then happening on the screen in front of you, and what you've got effectively is a Wiimote, a Kinect of some description, you know, a Move device that's probably extremely accurate in comparison to those as well, because some of those are pretty kludgy. I mean, That's why I just couldn't get over the fact that gaming wasn't mentioned, unless they're just leaving that for the developers to find and think of, and I've probably just done myself out of millions of pounds. But I mean,
maybe I'm being a bit daft here, but ever since you've had the iPhone and the iPad being launched by Stevie on the screen, he's always had it attached, and he's always operated a great big video output screen for us to look at anyway.
I had it jailbroken, though, didn't I?
Yeah, but the point is, the technology has always been available. They just haven't let us have access to it until now. So I don't think it's particularly new. I just think it's like, oh, we've had this for ages and no one's really cottoned on that they could have it anyway. So let's give it to them and make it look like a great advance when it's been there the whole time.
No, I think that was a CD-er version, mate. I don't think it was Apple.
Okay. They've always had them linked to the screen in there.
Yes.
You know, it's always been wired in, and it's always been operated. The video's always been operated to mirror their screen, it's always been there.
Don, I'm not asking you to incriminate yourself here or anything, but you've done stuff for the iPad that I'm sure you had to perform some jiggery pokery to get into work.
Yeah. Well, it started off with I got a hardware device that enabled me to capture the output of the. Of the iPad, so an un-jailbroken iPad, but it's very limited. But no, you have to jailbreak. At the moment, you have to jailbreak it. But that's come on leaps and bounds. Some really good screen capture software now that you can get for a jailbroken iPad or iPhone. That works tremendously well. But, you know, it's such a pain because you're always one release behind the official release. And I mean, the last one for 4.2, it's been tethered for a long time. So every time I needed to reboot the machine, I'd have to reboot it in a certain way, and it's a major pain. And in fact, that's why I ended up with two. I had to buy a second iPad just so I could jailbreak it and keep the other one sort of as my personal iPad, and then just have one just for doing screencasts. So that's sort of like permanently jailbroken and sort of a nice clean build on it, so I can just sort of whenever I need to do any iOS stuff, I can just grab that and plug it in and away we go.
So that was the one that you were going to flush down the toilet when the Apple police turned up.
No.
Not me, Gov.
Actually, Apple are fairly relaxed about the jailbreaking thing. They don't make it too hard for people to jailbreak, so I don't think it's... and I think it pushes innovation as well within the developer community.
Yeah.
So I don't think they're too worried about jailbreaking, to be honest.
They seem to have given up a little bit, haven't they, with trying to crack it? Because, I mean, you look at the lengths that Sony's going to with the PS3 at the moment, and they're where Apple were a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. And you're right, it's gone very, very quiet around the whole jailbreak thing, hasn't it? There was always a story every day about Apple puts an update out, it stops the hackers, and that hasn't happened in the last 6 months, 8 months.
Well, the funny thing is that the GMC came out of 4.3 yesterday, and there's already a jailbroken version, or the procedures are there to jailbreak it today. So that's after I've done this, what I'm going to do is jailbreak my... I've got an iPod Touch that I also use jailbroken for screencasts, so I'm going to try and put 4.3... seed on the GM seed and then try and jailbreak it and see if I can do some stuff with it.
Oh, you guys that live on the edge.
If they call the jailbreak a developer tool, then they'd get all these people working on their behalf, because so many of the innovations that have come out because of someone's already done it anyway and they've decided, well, let's make our version of it and charge for it. So, just call it a developer tool.
Yeah, I mean, it's true, isn't it? The adversity is what breeds the development. It's what drives the thing forward. You know, when you've got a problem to solve, there's a solution for it. Whereas if you've got no problems, there's no solution. So I agree. It's driven it well past it. What about the Trojan this week? Because, I mean, that's pretty big news, I think. The Musminim A Trojan that Sophos have found. Any thoughts on that?
I'm scared.
Well, the thing is, they have been around on Mac for quite a while. I mean, I know this one's getting a lot of attention, but there have been certain websites that, you know, grown adults are permitted to go to that have stuck Trojans on Macs for years. I mean, thankfully, I've never had any because I don't use those facilities, but they have been there. I mean, you read it around the net. There have been Trojans on Macs. It's just this one has been put out, or I don't even actually think it's out there. I think the basic coding is out there because the guy that's written it has said, I've got this coding and he's proved that it works. But it's not a new phenomenon. It's just this one might go public as opposed to the other ones being only in certain areas of the internet if you decided to go and look at them.
Anyone know any more?
I just know I'm scared.
Yeah, I think you're quite right. I don't think it's out there yet. I've seen it. There's a couple of news releases about it. It's in beta. So the guy's yeah, exactly. developed it.
But it's a public it. Beta.
Yeah, are we signing up for the Trojan
beta Trojans?
Campaign,
yeah, that's what it says.
It's a public beta.
But of course, all the antivirus companies are probably jumping them down, going, "Yeah." So you know, oh, have you seen this? And it's.
Look, it's probably written, or I shouldn't say this, but it's probably written by an antivirus company.
No, not having that said. Not having that
Why
said.
Why not?
Because it might be true, and I don't want to get sued. No, it says it's based around Dark Comet, which is a well-known remote access Trojan for Windows. So it's a similar kind of code and similar kind of principle, but just acts with Macs instead of.
Would it have anything that you think, because, and this is just hypothetical, that since Apple's decided to go over to the Intel dark side over the last few years, does that mean that we're starting to see viruses that are becoming more developed for the Mac? And not only that, because of the popularity of where Apple is going, would that have anything to do with it, you think?
Well, there's only 10% of the market, aren't they, as far as computers is concerned. If you wanted to create a Mac virus, you'd be better off trying to do it in something like iOS and spreading it through Cydia, which I know has happened in the past, because you're never going to get it through the App Store, hopefully, which they've had a few issues, I know. Interesting today as well that Android has got a problem. There's up to 51 applications they reckon may be fitted with a Trojan and be available in the Google Marketplace.
Well, it was worse than that, though, wasn't it? It was a root, so they could actually install additional code. So they actually quickly got them off the App Store. But you know, I think they were talking about tens, even hundreds of thousands of people who actually downloaded this particular app, and they didn't really know what was going to happen next.
And it was sending the IMEI number back as well, wasn't it? So you know, your unique reference for your device was going back to them to use elsewhere nefariously as well.
Very scary.
Very. We've got Graham Cluley from Sophos coming on at 3 o'clock this afternoon for a special show with Mark Sonner, who's kind of a friend of the network and a security expert who used to be with Message Labs. So we'll have more information about that at 3 o'clock for sure, definitely. What about the stuff of dropping Intel Macs as well? Because we were all, you know, not surprised to see the PowerPC IBM stuff disappear from support after Leopard came out and Snow Leopard came out. But they're talking about Lion now is going to drop the early version Intel Macs. I got to say, and this is where I'm kind of lost and I'm not a techie, but I would have thought like the Intel chips would have been fairly synonymous and easy to carry on the support with. Is dropping them because of the problem that it's too difficult to keep up with those, or are they just dropping them because they think they should, because they want to keep the product line moving forwards?
Well, all the chips that they're dropping are all the 32-bit only chips, aren't they?
Right. So they're going to get rid of the parallel 3264 option.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's if you look at God, how many of the years whizzing past, and I'm sitting there thinking, oh, they're dropping support for Macs that are really new, and then you look at it, oh yeah, actually they're quite old already. But I suspect it's just to do with the fact that those ones offer only 32-bit, and I think that Apple are, even if Lion itself is not going to go wholly 64-bit, which it probably isn't, I think they're going to take the opportunity to scythe that away so they don't even have to think about developing any further for that.
I think it's about that.
Right.
I do. I think it's about not having to think further. And let's not count out Windows here. Windows is doing the same thing, really. They want everybody to also get off on 32-bit as well. 64-bit's, you know, definitely more secure. It is the leap forward, and we all know that Apple wants to always be at the forefront of that. They always want to be what's next, what's best. And I'm disappointed, though, because I've also heard that about the early Core 2 Duos won't be supported anymore and these kind of things. Now, that remains to be seen. I kind of heard that through kind of grapevine channels. But so if that's the case, I'm not happy about it, but I understand it at the same time.
Is the Duo safe? Is the Core 2
No, I think that it's the Core Solo and the Core Duo that's going, isn't it? Leaving anything that's Core 2 Duo will be fine.
Okay. So maybe it was the core, maybe it was the Duo that I seen that.
Yeah, no, it's the Core Solo and the Core Duo that are off.
I mean, Alex, you were making a point earlier on. You were saying, I can't remember what piece of software you were talking about, but you were saying when it runs in 32-bit as opposed to 64, when it tries to run in 64, it's a bag of crap, and then you, as soon as you switch it back to 32-bit mode, you get good functionality from it. How's that affecting you? I mean, that's professional software.
Well, I'm actually quite worried because I've got my plugins for my Photoshop are worth more on my Mac. You know, I can go and buy a brand new Mac now, and it will cost me less than if I had to replace these plugins. Now, a lot of these plugins are slightly older, and the developers have not made 64-bit versions of it. So if I run Photoshop CS5 in 64-bit mode, I lose 50% of my plugins, which cost me more than this machine. I have to run CS5 in 32-bit mode to use a lot of the things that I've paid a lot of money for quite recently. And it really bothers me that what there's two things they're doing. They're saying to the software developers, you've got to make 64-bit versions if you want people to ever buy your stuff, you know, from a certain point. But they're also, I mean, I'm running on I've got three Macs in this room, and two of them probably be all right online, and one of them won't. But the one that won't is what I call my backup Mac, my backup iMac.
Yeah.
And if they do that to me, then you know, I'm in real trouble. I've got a. It would get to the point where I would seriously think making my backup machine a PC.
Ooh,
because
hell.
If they're going to basically make everything I've got obsolete on anything but a new machine, then me and Mr. Stevie are going to have words.
Alex is thinking Hackintosh.
Well, I'm actually thinking I've spent years and years and years selling these damn things. Every time I go into a shop or every time I'm taking photos and people ask me my advice will change. Because as soon as they start to make me think, well, you know what? You're not supporting me anymore. You know, I don't mean to be too rude about it, but, you know, you can go and jump.
But is the watershed not the fact that they stop supporting it with the new OS? It's when they stop supporting the old OS. So they're stopping this within Lion, but they're not saying that they're going to cut off support for Snow Leopard or Leopard as yet. The problem's really going to come, though, when they want to cut you off from Leopard. That's the first watershed.
It's a good idea, but what they've done is, at the end of this Snow Leopard run, they've added the App Store. They've added bits and pieces to this. So when Lion comes out, there's going to be lots of things that you're... The way they're writing it, and because of the way they've updated Snow Leopard, there's going to be lots and bits and pieces that aren't going to be backward compatible. So you're going to be either I buy a new machine and buy a lot of new software, or I'm going to be running something that is very, very different. You know, it's going to be the difference between G4 or G5 and Intel. You know, it's going to be that much different, but they're going to do it through software rather than doing it through hardware. And I'm actually quite worried about it.
Yep, definitely.
Alex is now scared.
Officially. As scared as you are about viruses.
Yes. Scared.
Any other news this week that kind of struck anyone that was interested in the Apple ways?
Well, I'm scared.
Go on.
I'm scared. The bit that scared me was the Johnny Ive coming back to the UK bit.
Was it because does he want to start a Mac support business in Cirencester then? Is that the...
Oh, yeah, that would be... Who should we use? Dr. Happy Mac? Or
Dr. Happy Mac.
Yeah, but the difference is that Johnny Ive will walk in, charge him $5,000 and go, looks all right. Sorry, Mac, go on, you were making a serious point.
It was the whole sort of 1-2, the Steve Jobs, then Johnny Ive thing, probably more damaging combined to you know, market jitters and things than either one separately.
So you think it's, I mean, are they going to let him come? They're not going to let him come back, surely.
What?
They're not going to let Johnny Ive come back to the UK and live just to bring his kids to school.
No, well, what it is he wants
to. They can't actually transfer him to Guantanamo Bay, can they? Shove him in an orange jumpsuit, put him in the bay, and tell him to keep designing.
Oh, dearly. I can never wear orange, darling. No, the
get in your cell, Ive.
Well, he's got a big house, apparently, in Hampshire that he never lives in. I love the quote from one of the neighbours. We never see Johnny around here these days. It's such a shame.
Poor Johnny.
No, Master Johnny.
He thought he was going to get the top job. And if he's not going to be getting the top job, he's going to take his toys and come home.
Can you really see Jonathan Ive replacing Steve Jobs and not Tim Cook?
Yeah. Yes, I can. I was looking through, I don't know what online magazine it was, and there was, you know, you all had to vote, and it was who would replace Steve Jobs, and he was very, very high up on the list. A lot higher. It was like one of those, really? But a lot of people thought he might be the man.
Yeah, but Mark Zuckerberg was on that list as well.
Yeah, but that was, I think that was a 4% job, yeah.
God. There's the end of the world as we know it. Good Lord.
A comment in the chat room from Mark saying, Johnny's kids could have a school jet instead of a school bus.
Well, they could just be educated on the jet.
Why don't they just get a bloody tutor? I mean, I'm sure he earns enough to pay for a tutor. What, 15 grand a year, 20 grand a year?
If he does move back to the UK, he can always FaceTime across to Cupertino to, you know, give them guidance. They've got the two cameras on the iPad. They can show him the products that he can get to say.
That's a good
point.
Why
do you think they're there now? That's why they're there now.
Exactly, yeah.
It's like, it's true.
He's not just the designer. He doesn't just work at Apple. He is almost Steve Jobs' soulmate. And I suspect that the idea of an Apple without Steve Jobs just doesn't appeal to him. I could see him just having no interest in working there.
God, you think it's that bad? He'd get the mournful.
Yeah, I think they're like clones. I think they think the same. They probably synchronized their movements together. It's probably a bit spooky when they're in the office as one. No, I could quite see that they think each other's thoughts, and you know, he makes real what is inside Steve Jobs' head, and I think that he probably feels that without.
Are you suggesting there's nothing inside Jonathan Ive's head that isn't put there by Steve Jobs? We've got to be so careful with this conversation. Jesus.
No, but, I mean, historically, this is what's happened to Apple before, though. I mean, this is why Jobs left and then came back again, because it's almost like you're a member of I'm the head of the school gang, I'm the head of the clique, and then one person changes, it's all change. It's almost like British politics.
But it happens at every big company, doesn't it?
They're kind of what together, aren't they? I mean, you got Ive and you got Steve, and yeah, and maybe if one does leave or Steve decides to, you know, say he's had enough and he's going to retire, then maybe Johnny does feel a little bit like, oh man, I lost my best friend. What do I do now? I'm going to go home. I'm going to go to England. So,
well, there's going to be a power struggle, isn't there?
You think? You could see blood on the boardroom. Yeah.
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt.
It's all smiling and daggers.
That's probably going to be the most exciting thing to happen to Apple for a long, long time. I mean, it's going to get nasty, and maybe he's sort of just laying down, like, you know, you don't give me what I want, I'm off. And he's firing the first shot across the bow.
Isn't there already a succession plan?
Hang on, Don, sorry, carry on. Right.
No, just saying, wouldn't there already be a succession plan in place? It's not something they could leave to the last minute, and then it's a free-for-all. I mean, it's a multi-billion dollar corporation, isn't it? They must have these things planned out for many years in all eventualities. So
you have a plan, but then once the person that makes the plan, e.g. Steve Jobs, isn't there anymore, you might as well forget about that plan. I
think it's like British politics. Plans change.
I mean, it's kind of like the Queen Mother's funeral, isn't it? I mean, she had a big hand in setting up what she wanted to happen, knowing full well that she wasn't going to be there in any kind of active capacity. And the Steve Jobs must have done the same kind of thing, because he didn't look a well man, I have to say. But there's a certain point in what Alex is saying, that, you know, best laid plans and all that kind of stuff. And there was talk of Tim Cook leaving earlier this year, wasn't there? You know, there were suggestions he'd got offers to go to, I can't remember who it was. It was someone on the side. It was someone, you know, a bit left field in comparison to Apple. But it could be a free-for-all. If Tim Cook then decided he wanted to leave, that really would throw the doors wide open. And would it be the end of Apple? Would it be, this current renaissance would start to look a little bit more wavery?
No, you've got to remember that all these people have got huge investments, not just personal investments in Apple, but, you know, monetary investments as well, that they're all riding on tons and tons of stock options. Yeah. They want what's best for the company and what's best for them. And everything is planned. I mean, look at when Steve did his went on his current sick leave. You know, it was the day before the best earnings call that they've ever had. And you know, these things are all timed to have the least impact as possible on the share price. And the last thing that they would want would have a an in, a public sort of internal fight on who was to get control of Apple. I just can't see it happening myself.
No, you wouldn't have thought so. You would
definitely
hope
not a public.
They're too big. They're just too big.
Definitely not a public fight. No, I mean, who knows? Maybe Johnny and Steve have got other big plans. They're going to go start a company and call it Pear. Who knows?
Right,
the control hierarchy of Apple does come directly from the top. You know, it's not like most large companies where, you know, you've got a board and, you know, everyone's got a certain amount of power. Steve Jobs has proved time after time that he is Apple, because whenever he's not involved, I mean, this last time it's actually been okay, but whenever he's not involved, things just get that little bit shaky.
So you can't say that. I don't want Apple to have problems. That's not true, because when he left last time, again, they had record quarter on quarter on quarter. And don't forget, all these products are planned 12 months, 18 months in advance. So, and when Steve left the first time, it was a completely different Apple when he went then. You know, it's not the Apple that he's built up this empire of people around him that he's handpicked. And, you know, if Steve left tomorrow, yes, there'd be a downturn, but it really wouldn't make that big a difference. It really wouldn't. That's my personal feeling anyway. I think they would carry on at least for the next 5 or 10 years.
I think the last word on the chubby goes to the chat room. Jonathan Ive couldn't take the pay drop because, of course, Steve only gets $1 a year. Right, have we got a cool thingy? We'll start with you, Don. Have you got a cool thingy for us?
An eye thingy? Come to me again.
Yeah, oh, right, okay. Kyle, would you like to start us off? Your eye thingy, please, mate.
Sure. You know, we're just all talk about this week about GarageBand and everything else on the iPad. And I was just kind of thinking, what's a free app that does recording out there? And I was looking for one actually on the iPhone. There's also an iPad version for it too. It's called Multi-Track Song Recorder. And it does exactly that. It is a multi-track recorder. You can even have little places in here where you can create a loop if you did a drum loop or whatever. And it's absolutely free. It works fantastic. And then you can actually make a mix of it and send the song via MP3 to your email.
Really? That sounds cool.
It is pretty cool. For free, you know, you can't beat it. And I really like the loop feature on it, though. You can actually create, you know, if you've drummed something up, or you can take that little waveform, it's pretty easy edit, hit loop on it, and then you can have that looping and do the other little bits and things. It doesn't have a whole lot of, I want to say, tweaking where you can go in and adjust the mids and the trebles and add a lot of effects and these kind of things, but it does the job.
So it's got a kind of emulatory type of function as well with it, which is good.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good. There's only one negative comment on it, which said that he couldn't send it through email, but I mean, that's possibly a little bit more of a device error than a fault in the stuff. Multi-track Song Recorder by Derek Walker. It's in the iTunes. We'll stick a link in the show notes as normal, and we've posted it in the chat room as well. Good pick, mate. Free we like.
Yes. Free is great.
Andrew, do you have a cool thingy for us?
A small cool thingy, yeah. I was sort of a bit struggling after my awesome pick of the Sony Ericsson phone the other week, but I have found this tiny little app, which I find very useful every day, which is called Disk Inventory X, or Disk Inventory 10, I suppose. I guess everyone's in a situation where you find that your hard drive is full and you have absolutely no idea why it's full. It's just a little app. You open it up and it presents you with a really nice little graphic display of the contents of your hard drive, all mapped out into a big square block, so you can see graphically the size of every file on your hard drive and what sort of file it is and where they're clustered. And you can sort of mouse over it and it sort of pops up to the windows and says, oh yeah, these are movie files, this is a movie, this is a file, and you can zoom in and biff stuff off your hard drive.
Excellent. It's by Derlien Software. DERLIEN.com. Derlien.com is where you go and get it. Did you say a price, mate? Sorry, I'm too busy typing to listen.
Oh, price of it? Gosh. Isn't it free?
It's free.
I think it's free.
Absolutely free. Released under GPL.
Mm.
Layout algorithm is based on K. Derstat, whoever he is. There you go.
Yeah, there's some professor of statistics invented this graph, this way of graphically showing the size, interrelated size of information. And there's a whole lot of, you can Google him, you can look at, there's a whole school of infographics about how to...
It does look good.
It's very good.
There's a screen picture here, and I've got to say, you could take a screen capture and have it as abstract art on your wall.
Yeah, it's funky. I mean, there's lots of disk sweeping utilities, you know, that will come up and say, this file's this, but it's the only one that has this really easy to understand graphic interface.
Mm. Brilliant. Alex, have you got anything for us, mate?
Yeah, it's a free app, which is something that I don't normally come up with. It costs a fortune. When I got the new MacBook, my newest MacBook Pro, I still believe that it's overheating. I still believe it's far too hot. I should talk to Andrew about this. But I had an argument with Apple because their argument was it's not a laptop, so therefore it shouldn't be on your lap. And I said, well, if it's on my lap, I still shouldn't get third-degree burns.
No.
But anyway, the way I found to get around this, it's a tiny little free app, and it's called SMC Fan Control. And all it is a tiny little app that runs in the background, and you can just change the temperatures that the fan kicks in and comes out from. And, you know, I might hear the fan slightly more often, not a lot, but slightly more often. But my MacBook no longer burns my legs. So I think for a free save your legs, possibly save your Mac catching on fire, if you do overheat it, this SMC fan control, I think, is a nice little useful app.
The solder on your motherboard slowly turned into one homogeneous mass, however, at least.
Well, I'll tell you what, I had it next to about, I don't know, an inch away from a bar of chocolate, and I went to pick up the bar of chocolate, and it was goo.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know what, this is getting a bit too hot.
There's a comment in the chat room from Mark here, Andrew. If you look at the graphic that's on your pick disc inventory, it says the big red patch on the inside is your porn library. Oh, dear me. Well, at least Andrew laughs, so we know that's not true then. Don, have you had enough time, mate, or shall I do mine?
Go on then. Well, there was a couple of things that I could have mentioned, but I'm going to go with the really simple one. Very easy one, which is an iPhone app. It's an iPhone game. It's called Tiny Wings. I don't know if you've actually played it. It's really, really simple. It's basically just a single finger press. You basically have a bird that swoops down into valleys, and then you can stop him flying, stop his wings, and he sort of zooms up. Really therapeutic. If you're getting stressed out and you just want to chill out for a little bit, just get a copy of Tiny Wings. I think it's 59p or something on the App Store. But very therapeutic. I've not got past Island 4 yet, so I'm still working on it. But that's my pick for a cool thing, Tiny Wings.
The slogan on it is, you've always dreamed of flying ... So
yeah, you've got to try it a couple of times, because when you first try it, you think, what the heck is this? This isn't any good. But once you get the knack, once you understand what you have to do, it becomes very easy, and it's good. It's good fun.
Excellent. Good pick. Price, sorry, forgot to look.
59p, I think. It's one of the cheap.
Yeah, 99 cents or 59p. Well done. Good one. Mine's also an iPhone application, and it's really kind of quite nice and funky, actually. I'm not into the kind of programs like Instagram and that kind of thing, but you know, some of the things that Instagram does give you some really nice effects on the photos that you take with your camera. But there's a thing called Label Box, which I noticed earlier on in the week, and I put on my iPhone yesterday and had a play with, and it's really, really cool. It gives you these little tiny ticker-type labels. You remember like diner label-type things, and you can actually just physically get one of these things and stick it on your image effectively, and it tags it, and it saves it as an alternate version as well, so you're not corrupting your original version. It's really, really nice, and it's really, really cheap. Because it's free. It's not like me to pick something that's cheap either. But there's a whole load of different things to choose from, loads and loads of different designs, and you just type on what you want, shake your phone, and it puts it on and takes it off, and that's it. There you go. Label Box. Right, last word, of course, goes to our sponsors. I need to start them up. There we go. UK2.net. They are the people that give us our bandwidth and the servers that we run on and all that kind of thing. And we say every week, and I know it must get really, really boring, but the network exists because of these guys. You know, the amount of stuff that we consume, we did a terabyte last month on audio alone, nothing else. There's nearly 4,000 downloads of each of the Max shows to start with, let alone all of the other shows, including the Daily Show. And if we didn't have them as our support infrastructure, if you like, our people that keep us going, we really would be folding straight away. What you need to do is click on the link. That's all they're expecting from you. You know, when they've got a product to sell, they know that they're the ones that have got to sell it to you. All we can do is drive you to where their website is. If you go to bageltechnews.com, you'll see a logo at the bottom of the page. Please go and click on that link and go through to UK2, see what they've got to offer. Please just click on it anyway if you possibly can. But if you're really looking for domain names, hosting, e-commerce, any of that kind of stuff, check them out. You'll probably find that the prices are good. And we know from our own history, before we actually got them as sponsors of the network, customer services are great. You know, I don't recommend anything that I wouldn't, you know, throw my own money at, and I threw my own money at them for a very long period of time. And I know that there's quite a few people who help us with the network who were already customers of UK2 before they came and started helping on the network. So please go and see them, and please give me support. They mean absolutely everything to us, our utter and total lifeblood. Right, thanks fellas, that was a really good conversation. I really enjoyed that. Where can we get a hold of you, Alex?
You can get me at AlexGFox at Twitter. Can I just add one thing apropos of some conversation you had with one of your friends on their American network? I've just had pop up on my screen on an email that after the launch of the app for the BBC iPlayer on iPad, they are releasing it very shortly to America, and the monthly subscription will be less than $10 a month.
Yeah, it's £6.
I'm late on this one, am I?
No, it was today's lead story, mate. It was only released yesterday. But yeah, it was the chief executive or the director general of BBC announced that there was going to be an international iPad app, which I'm kind of pissed off at, because you get it for less than I pay for a license fee all year.
Exactly. Don't pay your license fee and get an iPad app from America.
And that's because of the way that the BBC is funded, of course.
Yes.
Gets. Don, where can we get a hold of you?
Well, you can find me over at my day job is screencastonline.com. You can see all my video tutorials. I also have a blog, themaxscreencastguy.com, and you can also find me on Twitter as Don McAllister.
And a very, very good friend to the network as well. If you go down to uk2.net and look at their logo on our front page, right next to it, you're going to see a Screencasts Online logo. Now, if you go and click on that, you go through to Don's website, and if you use Bagel Tech as a code, you'll get 50% off your joining fee for Screencasts Online. And I've got to say, I've been a subscriber to Screencasts for a number of years, and the number of shows I've watched when I've got myself stuck or in a bind with a piece of software or don't know where to start, they're really, really easy to watch. Dead simple. Your voice, Don, it just keeps you away from madness and from frisbeeing the mouse across the room as well.
It does put some people to sleep as well, apparently, because some people like to drift off to sleep listening to my voice, so it's a double-edged sword. <yeah.
laughs> I don't know what to say to that. But no, I stay calm when I'm listening to your videos as well, so even if I'm getting a bit stumped, I'm all right. Cool. So great service. Please go and use it. And like I said, if you use our link, then you get a good reduction as well, which is great. Kyle, where can we get a hold of you, mate? Kyle, you still there? Kyle's gone mute. You've got on mute, mate. No. You can get a hold of Kyle at Kyle Swagger. He does our media show as well, Bagel Tech Media, so that's at Bagel Tech Media as well on Twitter. And he's a fab sterling bloke. Give him a try. And last of all, Andrew, where can we get a hold of you, mate?
You can follow me on Twitter at Dr. Happy Mac. Or you can go to www.drhappymac.co.uk and have a look around, have a read, have a think, and that's me.
And if you've got a Mac that's not working, then start with Andrew at Dr. Happy Mac and give him a buzz on Twitter, and I'm sure he'll give you a bit of advice.
Yeah,
if it's send it to me and I'll fix it.
Lots of people always tweeting me, and you know, if it's something we can do, you know, quickly over the Twitter, then why not sort of share the fixiness.
Kyle should have done that the other week when he started off with, "Hello, Andrew, there's smoke billowing out the back of my G4. Oh dear. He's had to get rid of it, of course. Right, we'll be back again next week with the Mac Show as normal, but stick around because in 45 minutes we're going to have Graham Cluley here from Sophos, and he's going to talk about the Musminim Trojan that has been found this week by Sophos, and also generally how you go about keeping yourself safe online if you're a Mac user, and even if you go to those sites that turn your disk encryption system red like Andrew's, then you should be all right. So stick around, 3 o'clock, that's 45 minutes from now, and you'll be able to watch it if you're looking outside. If not, and you're listening to the podcast and it's tomorrow, well, have a good weekend. See you next week.